Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Which one you are, I'd like to wake up.
It is The Savage Nation, day after Halloween. I feel like the chimpanzee in the zoo after eating too much candy. And here we are. It's amazing. It's amazing what's going on in the world. Your president, your soft totalitarian president, has signed an executive order tonight taking over the nation's climate change policies. Another step towards tyranny. We know about the TSA shooting, six injured, LAX shooting, the gunman was wounded, he's in custody, he's not dead, and he's a boy from New Jersey. Now, right away, of course, the fools in the media said it was anti-government behavior. Some schmucks on MSNBC said it was because of the sequester that the shooting occurred. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. You talk about stupidity. Anyway, I want to talk about 10 reasons to oppose amnesty again today. I'm going to give you the 10 reasons why you must oppose amnesty, no matter who you are, no matter what your race is, no matter what your economic status is. Because only Zuckerface, only people like Mark Zuckerface can think we think he's compassionate. Only Mark Zuckerface thinks that we think he's compassionate. The undershirt-wearing Ghanif, who runs Facebook, in my opinion. But, of course, he's in favor of amnesty because we learned last night in the Savage Nation that he did a deal with the devil. The devil said to him, you back amnesty for the low-wage workers, and we'll grant you more H-1B visas so you can bring in computer programmers that'll work for one-third the rate that you'd have to pay American workers. So that's why Mark Zuckerface is so popular. But I don't want to talk about that right now. What I want to talk about in the Savage Nation is all the news, of course, news, views, and reviews. So I want to review first Halloween's Irish history. People don't know where Halloween came from. And since one of the elements that I support is Borders, language, and culture, if I tell you that Halloween has an Irish history and that our history will be altered forever if you bring in 30 million people who don't even have a scintilla of interest in our history, you should know that Halloween has an Irish history. It's funny that Halloween has become almost more of a national holiday than almost any other in the country. The kids with the fake cobwebs, the trick-or-treating, and it's not really America. It's been celebrated as part of the American religion since the mid to late 19th century. That's when the greatest waves of European immigrants came to our shores. But where did Halloween come from? I'll tell you that in a minute. But I want to first tell you about what happened to me last night after I got off the air. I got off the air, I went home, and there was a huge block party in one of the places that I live where there's lots of little kids, and it's actually a lot of fun. And I didn't want to be the curmudgeon saying, bah, humbug, it's just horrible, it's not religious. I actually enjoyed seeing the children. They run around, they're so happy, the flashlights and the this and that. And some neighbors actually said, why don't you stop, have a beer, a hamburger. I stopped and had a beer and a hamburger, and then I continued to walk Teddy up the street. It's a very close-knit, small neighborhood. It was a nice feeling. I passed another house, and there was an old woman with gray hair. I thought it was Hillary Clinton for a minute, sitting in a chair with a dog. But no, it wasn't. She was telling a story to little children that scared the heck out of them. She was sitting and telling, I eavesdropped, I'll be honest, over the fence, because the children were stunned. They were sitting there listening to this old woman with gray hair, and they were stunned. And she said, I saw my dead son. He came back to me in the form of a hawk. The kids were so frightened. It was dark out, and I thought that they had seen a witch. But I take these things very seriously, and so when I heard her saying that, I went over, and I said, may I hear what you're saying? What's your name? She said, I wouldn't give you her name. Let's say her name is Cheryl. So she said, yes, she said, I did tell the children I saw my dead son in the form of a hawk. And I asked her the story. And her story was quite interesting. I don't know whether to believe it or not. Why shouldn't I believe it? What, I should believe everything is super rational and computer generated? I'm not so sure. She said, yes, 10 years ago he shot his brains out with a gun. He shot his head off, she said. And she said, I'm heartbroken from it, but I'm not afraid to die, she said. He's waiting for me on the other side. The children were so scared. They all left. I was the only one there with the dog. So her little dog kept barking at us. It was terrible, and I couldn't hear her that well. But I asked her to tell me more of the story. I said, how did you know it was your son? And she told me. Then she said she called Animal Protective Services to get the hawk out of the house. And the hawk wouldn't leave. It kept going up to a beam and looking down at her. And finally, when the service was able to shoo the hawk out of her house, it looked back at her as it was flying over the bay. And she said, it said to me, Mom, I'm okay. I'm waiting for you. What's amazing about this story to me is that this house is right on the San Francisco Bay. It's on the water. Hawks never come down to water level. In all the years I've lived near the water, I've never seen a hawk on the water. The hawks are up on the hill. They're up on the hill. I wouldn't call it a mountain, but there's a mountain-like hill, maybe 500 feet. And the hawks circle the trees up there. And I see them circling, and they look to hit other birds and knock them out of the sky and kill them. That's what they do, hawks. It's, survival of the fittest. But I have never seen a hawk down here. I'll be honest with you. So should I believe the woman when she said it was her deceased son and she's no longer afraid to die and he's waiting for her on the other side? I frankly found it very calming, to be honest with you. And there's no political point to the story. Don't look for the computer to send it to the FBI or some busybody in the government that I said something that offended you. There's no political point to the story. Obama uses executive order and sweeping takeover of the nation's climate change policies. Oh, well, another road to slavery. The TSA employee, what can you say about it? A nut. A nut came with a gun and got through the thing and started shooting. What else is in the news? There's a lot in the news. I mean, you want me to talk about what I told you? I'll do that. Or you could do the open mic job if you want, 855-407-282. Where is everybody? It's always Friday's murder. Friday is a murderous night for radio. It's horrible. I'll be honest with you. I can't wait to go to 12 to 3 already. At least people will be awake. Climate power grab. Obama uses exec order and sweeping policy takeover. President dictator signs an executive order that allows him to take control of climate change policies in a move that could skirt legislative oversight and push a federal agenda on states as he seeks to better prepare for events like Superstorm Sandy. In other words, he's a dictator. The Europeans are calling him a soft totalitarian is what they're calling him, but it didn't make it to your local paper. We all know it's hocus pocus. Hocus pocus lemony ocus. Hocus pocus. So he's taken it over with a few governors. You want to hear the names of the governors who are on his committee? They're all far-left radical Democrats. Do I have to read their names? I'll read you the names of the people who believe in global warming while scientists don't. Most rational scientists understand it's a complete fraud. Complete fraud. They know that it's nothing. The so-called task force includes, you ready for this? Here we go. Let's get the checklist out. Governor Jerry Brown of California, surprise. Neil Abercrombie of Hawaii, surprise. Delaware Governor Jack Markell, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn, and Jay Inslee of Washington. All radical leftists. All radical leftists. All lining up to cash in on the trillions of dollars on this fraud called global warming. Don't call me on it. No, I don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. Global warming is not the issue that started this grab fest. It's unbelievable how people let him get away with this. It's another underhanded scheme to take over our nation like the petty dictator that he is. It's unbelievable. You see, the plan is to reduce our carbon emissions 17% in the next 15 years. That's really good. See, by then China will have increased their carbon emissions by 100%. It's as simple as that. That's the whole story. The dictator has spoken. One step at a time. One step at a time. Yes, indeed. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son so that everyone who believes in him may not perish but have eternal life. And that son, of course, was Barack Hussein Obama. 10,000 years ago, the last ice age ended. Did emissions from cars and factories cause the end of that ice age, Mr. Brown? Mr. Abercrombie? Were you here 10,000 years ago? Can you verify that the last ice age ended? Because of cars? I don't think the Model T was around 10,000 years ago. I'm not up on my automotive history. I haven't gone to the automotive museum. Let's take the first call on the hawk job. See you ready. I'm for a slog like through cement tonight. 855-407-282. Now, we'll get through this together. This I can guarantee you. By the time that I was watching that TV all day today with the TSA all day long, you know what you watch it for. There's only one reason. There's only one reason. You want to see who the perpetrator was. That's all. You only want to see the perpetrator. No matter what the deadbeats in the media do to hide it, eventually they let it out. Now, because he was a white male, we saw the perpetrator. If he had been Nidal Hassan, we wouldn't see it for 7 years. If he had been the perpetrator of the Fort Hood massacre, they would have hidden it from us for 7 years. I'm serious. There's a lot of other news. I'll give it all to you. Let's start with Carol WNIS in Norfolk, Virginia. Carol, go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I live off the Chesapeake Bay, and hawks talk to me. I'm an intuitive type person, and I'm very close to nature. When my father passed away, hawks were around me all the time. I've seen things, and for instance, once I was planting a plant, and that hawk didn't like that plant and came out and just started yak, 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 yak. And it was very, very hot, and I thought, yeah, I'll move it tomorrow. Nope, that hawk went into the woods.
So you talk to hawks?
Oh,
and
yes.
Hawks talk to you?
Oh, yes. We had a kind of a spiritual group, and a friend of mine, and we would clear it, because if you get a lot of spiritual people together, it brings...
But you're in Maryland, did you say?
No, sir. I am in Gloucester, Virginia, which is just...
But are the hawks registered Democrats yet? Have they been signed up to vote for the Democrat Party?
They're red-tailed hawks.
They're red-tailed hawks. They must be signed up to vote for the Democrat Party.
Eagles.
Have they used their claw print yet on a Democrat voter ID?
No. Also, I've been doing my...
No, I'm saying, you mean Obama's minions have not signed up the hawks to vote Democrat?
Anyway, I've been doing my work as well.
No, I'm asking you, are the hawks Democrat or Republican? I guess that's what I'm really asking.
Republican.
They're Republican hawks.
Republican.
Well, then we'll have to declaw them, because there may be some kind of racism in them. Any Republican-oriented animal might be a racist or a gun-toting NRA member. You never can tell. Hey, look, the next time you see a hawk flying around, ask them what they think of me. I've never seen one down here at the water. Hawks are generally up in the forests, aren't they?
No, they're by the water. They're in the mountains.
Oh. Down here, I've never seen one. They're afraid of the seagulls. See, the seagulls have bigger beaks than they do.
Well, the crows chase them, too.
Yeah, in other words, it's big beak eats little beak, isn't it?
Not necessarily. I think it's the talons, and I think it's also the territory. But it's just...
Let me, in the world of the hawk, if they captured an animal, would they give it over to another animal for free, a half of the animal?
No.
And say, because you're too lazy to hunt for an animal, I'm giving you half of my kill?
Absolutely not.
Well, why do we give over half of our earnings to the government to disseminate to lazy deadbeats in America? How does that work?
We're stupid. We have to get the word out to the people to wake up and...
Yeah, you know that in the order of nature, if you keep doing that, eventually the society dies, because then nobody wants to work.
Exactly. So we've got... I go around every day. I've made my phone...
All right. Well, look, the next time you see a hawk, send them a savage regard. 855-409... Now, where did Halloween come from? I got to get back to this. They say it's from the Celts. I used to think it meant it was Celts. I didn't know when I was in New York. Not Seltzer, but when I would see the word C-E-L-T, I thought it was Celt because of Celtics. There was a basketball team, the Celts. I didn't know that it was called Celts until later on in my life. And, of course, that relates. You know why they're called Celts? Because they wear Celts. Because a salesman came around from Brooklyn. He said, "You want a Celt?" And they said, "What? You want to wear a Celt? You feel like wearing a Celt?" I said, "What do you mean a Celt? It's Celt out. Don't you need to wear a Celt?" All right, I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Savage.
It's a short segment. I don't even have time to listen to Surf City by the Beach Boys. Play it a minute, though, just a second. Savage Nation. We're talking about hawks talking to the dead. The kids think it's just running around in the streets with a candy job. Oh, they took all of my raisins. Yes, they did eat all the raisins. I'm one of those guys who would not put candy in the bucket. And one of them did kick the bucket at the end because there were no raisins left. It was on the a floor outside my garage. They took the little boxes of Newman's raisins. I love them. I shouldn't say them the brand. They should advertise. They would never. A liberal company like that. No, I'm too American. Why don't they advertise raisins in China? WMAL, Judd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, good to hear your voice, Doctor.
Well, thank God, because it means I'm still living. That's true.
Well, I'm still living, too. You know, every day's a holiday that, you know, they used to.
That's right, it is. So what's your topic, quickly, on the Raven?
Okay, on birds. Here we go. Number one, I agree that most of your eagles and hawks sit up in tall trees or tall buildings and come down at their enemies.
Thank you.
Rabbits or small rodents like that, and sometimes small birds. I agree with that. Number two, I went to UVA, and on the lawn at one point for a year or so, Edgar Allan Poe was a student. His father wanted him to go to...
You don't mean during the years that you were there, I hope.
No, not exactly. Back in the 19th century, Poe was there.
I'm just joking. No, I didn't know because you seem to compress time in your statement.
In any event, the great poem, The Raven, who's that rapping, who's that tapping at my...
So Edgar Allan Poe must have had some experience with birds talking to him, right?
Oh, I don't know about talking, but definitely they can come down and eat nuts on the ground and whatever. And if
wow. Hold on a minute. We'll come back and talk about the raven and other bird stories. And then we'll talk about the dictator bird, the immigrant birds, the emigrant birds, and the emigrant gap.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Okay. Dealer's choice. So where did Halloween come from? When I say borders, language, and culture, you think I'm like a stick in the mud, you know, all the Bible. Well, even Halloween is part of our culture, and it's European in origin. And I don't know about you, I'm not so quick to want to throw it in the garbage. Many people believe that it derives from the ancient Celtic holiday of Samhain. And many of the traditions that we celebrate on Halloween stem from the Celtic Gaelic culture, by the way. Celtic Gaelic culture. You know, old European stuff that the liberals seem to hate. You know that? Samhain, which means November in Irish, was the end of summer and the harvest season in the Celtic calendar. And that's when towns made preparations for winter. I'm reading now from Halloween's Irish History, Samhain Harvest Festival in the Washington Times by Connor Higgins. It was a fascinating article. So it was a harvest festival. And it was the last great feast held outdoors before the cold months came, which is interesting because in the neighborhood, I mean, they had a fire going in someone's driveway and they're cooking meat and the kids ran over saying, ooh, tri-tip, it's better than candy. The mother probably had, starving him on a vegetarian diet. The poor little boy was dying for a little testosterone. On the surface, it was a celebration of the harvest preparations, blah, blah, blah. Now listen to this. You see, the Celts believed that on Samhain, the veil between the living and the dead was dropped for one day, and the spirits of the living could intermingle with the spirits of the dead. It's also been speculated that this feast of Halloween, derived from the Celtic holiday, was a celebration of the dead that had lost, that the dead that they had lost since the last Samhain. This would include warriors lost in battle, children lost at birth, the old and the sick. All of the dead from the year would be celebrated. It's interesting that the Mexican Day of the Dead has some of this in it. In a strange note, the Mexicans take it to another level. They actually go to the graveyard with food and lay down there. I'm not ready for that part of it. I mean, to me, walking the streets and looking at candles as far as I'll go. But all right, to each his own. To each his own. So there's a little overlap here. That's not so bad. I mean, and you think about it. Mexican music derives The music we hear today is largely Germanic, from when the Germans colonized Mexico. So they're good. I'll go halfway on that one. Even the jack-o'-lantern is reputed to have roots in Celtic mythology. Jack-o'-lantern, you know, the Halloween thing, or Stingy Jack, was the rogue of rogues of Irish mythology. Stingy Jack, a drifter, derelict, and a drunkard, was overheard by the devil talking about how he had tricked Lightstone and drank his way through life. The devil, always up for a challenge, wanted to see just how good Jack was. To make a medium short story, Jack met the devil, got him drunk, and tricked him into giving him 10 more years. 10 years later, Jack tricked the devil again into never taking his soul to hell. When Jack died, heaven refused to take him, and when Jack went down to hell to try to gain entrance, the devil politely reminded him of their deal. Instead, the devil gave Jack an ember of hell and a hollow gourd for a lantern to illuminate a pathway through the netherworld. And so when the veil between the living and the dead is dropped on this holiday, which I can never remember, Samhain, a tough language, we can see Stingy Jack of the Lantern, Jack-o'-lantern, trying to get into heaven or hell. This is very interesting. I didn't know that. Just from a pumpkin. To this day, I can remember carving pumpkins with the kids. I always liked the smell of a pumpkin. We threw the seeds out like idiots. Little did I know there was zinc, prostate. Had I only known, I would have eaten the seeds as a kid. Well, I did eat a lot of pumpkin seeds. Sure, they sold them in machines. Today they sell Adderall in machines for children. I'm surprised they don't have condom machines in grade school, in the government grade schools, along with Adderall machines, where if a kid feels edgy or not edgy enough, he just can put a debit card in from Obamacare, and they can get an Adderall shot. Maybe it's coming soon with the new Obamacare, because after all, our children are so important. So the children, the spirits. That is a tough language. I try. Of all the languages, I don't know one word of Gaelic. I had an Irish friend who owned an Irish bar, and they would speak to me. I had no idea. It has no roots in anything that I could understand. You know, you listen to someone in Portuguese, you pick up a word here and there. Italian, you can get a word or two. Because, you know, the Latin root. But Celtic, good God. He had a dog, an Irish wolfhound. I love that dog. And they only live to 6. That's the heartbreak. The bigger the dog, the less they live. How does that work? Is that true with men, too? The bigger the man, the faster the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Little guys live longer, apparently. Little dogs, too. Why is that? Why do little dogs live longer than big dogs? I don't understand. It's heartbreaking. You know, you lose a dog that's 165 pounds, like losing a friend. Horrible thing. When he would bolt from that Irish bar, we'd be drinking a beer. The dog would lay there in the sawdust, not moving a muscle. It was so big. The dog's head was frighteningly large. It was the size of my dog now. My whole dog is smaller than that dog's head. He lay there. He was the most gentle creature. But he once saw something a block away. He leapt up, and he ran like I never saw it. In 3 lopes, he was down the street. He ran down Green Street. Then he died. They got another one. I'd love to have Irish wolfhounds. You think about the derivation of the wolfhound. They killed wolves. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine a pack of dogs trained to kill wolves? And I remember now, I went to a dog show a couple of years ago, and I saw collars that were made for wolfhounds that had spikes on them. That was pretty amazing. These were the Turkish wolfhounds, I think. I forget the breed. They would hide amongst the sheep, and the Turks would make spiked collars out of real steel. I'm not talking Polk Street here. I'm not talking about the Folsom Street Fair. I'm talking about spiked collars made of steel. You know, primitive, what do you call it? The blacksmith would make them. And they would have real deep spikes, you know, long spikes, 2-3 inches. And the dogs would hide amongst the sheep. And when the wolves would come to kill the sheep, the wolfhound would strike. And to protect their neck, they had the collars on, very much like our leather necks were protected by leather from the Muslim pirates in the early days, as I told you that story. It's very interesting how, you know, life and art and animals. But the point is that I took that story that I saw at the dog show, and I put it into my first novel, which I wrote with love. I mean, the first commercial novel, Abuse of Power with Jack Hatfield. I poured everything into that book, everything into that book. Everything I saw that I thought was relevant went into that first book. All right, let me take some calls. I'm talking too much. Even though it's a talk show, I guess I shouldn't talk too much. Here's some good news. Here's something the government did right. I mean, we got our money's worth with this story. Officials say the U.S. drone killed a Pakistani Taliban leader. That's not bad. That's not a bad story. We got our money's worth. We got something out of our taxes. A U.S. drone strike Friday killed Hakmullah Muqsood, the leader of the Pakistan Taliban, and a major blow to the group that came after the government said it started peace talks with the insurgents. Muqsood, who was on a U.S. most wanted terrorist list with a $5 million bounty, is believed to have been behind a deadly suicide attack at a CIA base in Afghanistan, a failed car bombing in New York's Times Square. Oh! The ruthless 34-year-old commander, who was closely aligned with al-Qaeda, was widely reported to have been killed in 2010, but they got him! So the girls with the little computers in there down there below in Virginia, wherever they are, Florida, with the video games, they got the guy. I like the show Homeland that shows that. Is that based on reality? The girls in nice clothing, great bodies, they sit down there with computers killing people all over the world. Not a bad job. If you can't get a job on Fox News, I guess you can just kill people with drones. It's probably the second best thing. WMAL, Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, how are you?
Me? You never ask me that because my grandmother would never answer it, so neither do I. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Dr. Savage. You've been asking this week, why I keep talking about the administration and everything that's going on. I do believe that you single-handedly stopped the administration's attack on Syria. I mean,
well, that's a very, very noble sentiment. I don't believe I did it. I did talk against it repeatedly for day on end. I was almost foaming at my mouth over the insanity of bombing a sovereign nation for no reason whatsoever other than to move someone's commercial interests. But weren't there others?
Well, no, not at first. I do believe not at first. I believe they would have, in fact, if you wouldn't have screamed that for 2 or 3 days straight, that Friday night, I believe they would have attacked.
Well, I'd like to believe I had some effect. I think where you're going with this is, therefore, that's why I should talk about Obamacare?
That's why, sir, I believe that you should constantly be screaming since you have a show in which you could let the American people know what's going on. This, above all times, is more crucial. Yeah,
well, I do, but you see, I've changed my focus from Obamacare, because it is the law and it is falling apart on its own volition, to attacking amnesty, which Obama's working on. I want to stop it before he makes it into law. I want to scare the hell out of the Republicans and tell them they will be thrown out. The party will disintegrate if they go along with those criminals. That's the topic we should be focused on. My cohorts in talk radio, God bless them all, they're still arguing about something they lost. Do you understand my strategy? It's not that I don't think it's important to talk about Obamacare, but not ad nauseum. It's all day long. How much can anyone listen to that?
Right, right. I understand. And those that are, and because of you and others, they are beating that drum loud. Now let's find out what happened to the missing nukes. What are they doing with amnesty? Let's start beating that drum.
Well, okay, I did amnesty 3 days this week. I did it Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Today being Friday, I'm trying to, lighten it up a little bit. The audience is a little different. But I appreciate it. I would say I'm single-handedly responsible for stopping the Dubai ports deal going back a number of years. In fact, you raise an interesting point, Bill, and all my loyal listeners who would never miss a show if they can. I think we should go back into my archives and find the key moments in the Savage Radio talk show that changed the world and play them in the first week of my new show in January when I hit a whole new audience. You think that's a good idea?
That would be awesome.
And, I'm going to invite my audience to get into this with me, to become my producers. If you have good ideas of what I should do the first week in January when I go on the air in my new drive time slot, what should I do to introduce myself other than my regular show? I mean, I'm telling people, hey, don't expect me to change very much. It's going to be me, my moods, and the news. And I'll go up and down with it as I normally do. I can't change myself. But I need to introduce myself to the millions and millions of new listeners who will never have heard of me. I mean, just by sheer time and the real estate that I'm inheriting on the Cumulus stations, I will have millions of new listeners. And I think many of them need to know who I am so they don't confuse me with someone else. So I'd invite my listeners. Now, how do I get them to send it to me? God, that's the problem. I don't have any email. That's the issue. See, there's the problem there. Maybe we'll do a show on it next week from here and again. Like, Mike, you should do this. Mike, you should do that. Mike, you should do this. Mike, don't do that. Mike, do this. Eat your heart out. Hey, 855-400-7282 is the phone number. And we're off to a slow but good start on the Savage Nation. Immigration, amnesty. I told you last night, the polls show that most Mexican Americans oppose amnesty. You don't know that. I mean, if you want to start believing Obama, go ahead. Even the left wing is turning on him with Obamacare. Even I love our local little newspaper, the San Francisco. Oh, off to a rough start. Six enrollees. Off to a rough start. It's at the end of the Democrat Party. That's how rough the start is. It could be the end of the entire liberal experience. One would hope. But we'll see. The media will come to save them. 855, I don't know my number. I forgot it already. What time is it? 14 minutes to 7 on the west. 14 minutes to 10 on the east. No, it's 6:47 here, so that means it's 9:40. Are there any people on the east coast who are not going to a party or coming from a party or actually listening to talk radio? What are you hoping to listen to get out of the show tonight? There are people listening all night to talk radio. Let's have Art Blakey playing Moanin'. I want some jazz right now. It's a Friday night. Maybe we'll pick up some of the young folk on the way to a rave somewhere. It is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
So what happened to Samhain that it turned into Halloween? I'm going to go on with Halloween's Irish history. Since I talk about borders, language, and culture, this is an interesting story. So he writes, what happened to Samhain when it turned it into Halloween? Well, he says it was the Christians. Like many Roman, Nordic, Celtic, and Germanic traditions, the Christian missionaries who came to Celtic lands were very good at connecting pagan holidays with Christian celebrations and traditions. The Vikings were converted by missionaries comparing Odin as the All-Father to God the Father, while demonizing Loki as the trickster or even the devil. The Celtic tribes had several influences on modern Christianity through the assimilation of their traditions. St. Patrick, I don't want to read from this. That's not the kind of show I do. It's an interesting thing here because I have told you before, and I know people didn't like hearing it, that he's right about that, is that the missionaries were very good at connecting pagan holidays with Christian celebrations. And Christmas, per se, is not the birthday of Christ because nobody knows the day Jesus was born. It's just a fact of reality. And it was the Christians who noticed that the Europeans were celebrating a pagan holiday. They linked it up with the alleged birthday of Christ and turned it into Christmas, you know, the birth of Jesus. So people don't want to know that, but educated Christians understand that. It was actually a Persian holiday that celebrated Mithras, if I remember correctly. And my memory did not fail me. I remember now. It came back to me. I have a great memory when I want to. I can pull it out of the fire. But it was Mithras. And they were celebrating the birth of Mithras, which was on that particular day. And the Christian leaders at the time were afraid they were going to lose, you know, I guess in numbers or what, hundreds of thousands at the time. Who knows what the numbers of people were in that area. So they said, okay, that's the birth date of our Lord. Doesn't denigrate Christmas, for me to tell you the truth. I don't understand why people get mad if you tell them the truth. Educated Christians know this. It doesn't diminish the celebration of Christmas. So it's a mythological day, but it's about the Lord of the Christian people. But it's based upon a pagan holiday for Mithras. It's that simple. And again, I'm not here to challenge your belief system. Or we'll do Thanksgiving when it comes up. You know, people, oh, it's not Thanksgiving. They took it from the Indians. Again, every time I have to hear that. Or Columbus Day, every time it comes up. Leave me alone already. You know, you got your own holidays. Do it your own way. Dance with feathers and menstrual blood of dying pigeons for all I care. What do I care? Just leave me alone already. Let me celebrate the Columbus Day. I like the floats. I like the whole idea. It gives me an excuse to go and eat an Italian meal. What do you have to stick your nose? Why do you have to denigrate everything the minute you get to America? If you hate it so much, go back to the hellhole you came from. Go celebrate your pagan holidays there. That's what I feel like saying. What is the minute they get here from the third world? They come here, they right away spit on the flag and rip our traditions, and then start saying, we don't like this, we don't like that. You're a racist, you're an imperial. Get out of here. Go back where you came from. Go celebrate your rotten holiday in your hellhole. Well, I don't say those things. I'm saying it's an emotional feeling. I would never say such a thing on national radio because it might be misinterpreted, and we can't afford that. It could be very offensive to some sensitive third worlders who want to spit on our flag.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Hot Talk 560, KSFO. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
From John Wayne to Lady Gaga in two generations. From I Spy to I Cry in two generations. From I Love Lucy to I Love Loosely in two generations. From Al Einstein to Al Gore in two generations. From I Have a Dream to I Have a Scheme in two generations. From Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly in two generations. From starlets to harlots, preachers to breachers, athletes to sexleets, rabbis to sandflies, Boy Scouts to Toy Scouts, Girl Scouts to Twirl Scouts, from the Eagle to the Beagle, from LSD to ADD, from Cardigans to Partykins, from Cub Scouts to Scouting Cubs, from Aspirin to Oxycontin, from Lady Jane to Let's Get Insane, from Law to Claw, from Hanging to Ganging, from Zip Guns to Machine Guns, from Red Book to Spread Books, from Acorn the Tree to Acorn the Spree, from Babies to Puppies, from Guppies to Yuppies, from Gift Wrapping to Meatpacking, from Private Vets to Private Jets, from Soldiers Who Kill to Soldiers Without Will, from Lassie to Sassy, from Religion to Pigeons, from Eons to Peons, from Rapists to Offenders, from Stickball to Speedballs, from the Air Force to a Bear Force, from the Navy to Lose Gravy, from the Army to I'm Swami, from Israel to Fizriel, from Taiwan to Spearswan, from the Dragon to the Eagle, from the Dragon and the Beagle, from Dragsters to Drag Queens, from Redwoods to Deadwoods, from Health Foods to Wealth Foods, from Heroes to Zeros, from UFOs to IOUs, from Hirsute to Lawsuit, from Melarols to Melanine, from Niagara to Viagra, from Coney Island to Survival Island, from the Five Families to the Sly Families, from Al Capone to Sly Stallone, from Ike to Spikes, Truman to the Untruman, Reagan to Swayman, Rayburn to Pelosi, from the Eagle to the Beagle, from the Bible to the Legal. That's the story of America. America the Great to America that Greats. From Dr. King to Larry King. From LeMay to Dismay. Using hate crimes to create great crimes. Yeah, well, I can keep going with it. I'm collecting these. This is my old jazz poem. Originally on my notes, my yellow striped 8.5 by 11 paper, handwritten, 5:40 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, April 6th, no year, over Wichita Falls, Challenger 343,000 feet. I somehow write some of the most interesting poems in airplanes, which is why I don't fly, because I don't really want to write any more interesting poems. I just want to talk. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Let's listen to the callers now. Paul on WABC, welcome to the program.
Mike, I have one more. From Those That Ravage to the Brilliance of Mike Savage.
Of course, I love it. That nasty station that is deficient of Michael Savage now.
Oh, that goes back at least 15 years, I think, Mike.
Who knows?
I you know, trying to figure out your show for a while. You remind me of a one-man Broadway show. Your show is entirely satire. It's a
It can be, yes. When I'm in the right frame of mind, it goes back. I did homage to Mort Saul once. I had him on the show. Elderly gentleman, but he used to do this with the newspaper in the 50s. I was a wee lad. He'd come out on the stage with a newspaper and a cardigan, and he'd start riffing on the news. He did it. He was the first to do it. He's still around. He's 90-some-odd years old.
Well, you're doing it, and you don't even know you're doing it when you're doing it. When you're talking serious, when you're angry, when you're doing politics, when you're doing the news, whatever you're doing, it's satire. It's a natural, you know, just it flows out of you, satire. That is your primordial, I think, emotion on the world.
I take it you may be a psychologist by training.
Well, I'm a retired psychiatric nurse.
Thanks for the compliment. Do you have a straitjacket handy? No, I get it. Well, you know, in a way to say it's part of my nature, it is. Well, to have a satirical nature is a blessing and a curse. You know that, don't you?
Yes, yes. It keeps many men sane, yes.
It keeps many men sane and also can yield the opposite.
Well, yeah, it depends where you go with it. But, Mike, I'll tell you, you know, you relay the world and the situations in a way that, you know, like, cuts through all the fog and the haze. And I just, it's brilliant that, you know, you can just keep your wits about you while all others are losing theirs. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, Paul, now I know why you stay up late to listen to me on the East Coast.
Well, Mike, you know, it's, you know, I have to get my daily dose of Mike Savage. It's like my drug, okay?
Well, a lot of people used to say that years ago, and I hope I haven't lost my edge. I don't think I have because they're still coming into the tent.
Now, Mike, you're better than ever. I mean, and I can't wait till January because...
Yeah, that's a problem for me. In other words, it's bigger on better stations around the country... Earlier drive time, but how are you going to listen to me in the at 3 o'clock? Where are you going to be? You're a retired nurse. How are you going to listen to me?
Well, I do artwork. I fiddle around in my garden. I do some painting. I do.
All right. So during that slot, you can listen in the garden on a radio or whatever.
Absolutely, Mike. I'm not going to miss you. Like I said, you know.
But you know, satire. Let's talk about satire for a minute, Paul, because you know, as a psychiatric nurse, better than I do. That people with an overly satiric tongue can get themselves in a lot of trouble. And also, they can turn on themselves quite easily. Am I correct?
Yes. If their tendencies are toward, like, self-aggression, if they are, you know, overly aggressive toward others, you know, it's the ones that have that proclivity for, like, you know, they just want to, you know, provoke arguments. They want to incite fights. You know, a lot of the people I dealt with in the past, they were just, you know, basically brought to a hospital because of, you know, overdoses and substance abuse and things like that.
But if you look at the derivation in the most important book any English-speaking person can have, which is The Etymological Dictionary of the English Language by Skeet, which I've had next to me for the last 25 years, one of the finest books that a person should have, any literate English speaker should have it. If you look up satire, which I'm doing, satura, a species of poetry, originally a medley, derived from satura lanx, a full dish full of mixed ingredients, where satura is the feminine of satur, full. I didn't know that. I would have thought intuitively that it was related to satire, you know, something almost bordering on something demonic, by the way, the word satire.
I think it would be like almost ridicule the world, to satire, to take the truth and turn it upside down so that you can maybe just have a simple laugh on just the... malevolence of the situation, or you turn... Like,
all right, but remember... Hold on. Keep talking for 1 minute. I must get this. Or play music for 30 seconds. I've got to get this. Give me a minute.
Well, you know...
Where I quote what satire is, and I did it to protect myself from the vicious politicians who are very thin-skinned and might take offense at some of the things that I say about them in the political zoo. Here it is. Because I made more enemies with the political zoo than you could ever imagine. Because it really cut to the chase in that you know, I had cartoons drawn of the individuals, and then I called them by Latin names. Did you ever get the book, Paul, The Political Zoo, from years ago?
No, but I am...
Well, listen to this. I here's what I wrote. The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease, John Dryden, 1681. You know, another old dead white male who didn't know anything because he had a let us say, a vocabulary of several hundred thousand words, which were unnecessary. They were wasted words. You don't need more than 50 words of English to make $50 million a year with Time Warner out there. But he did the best he could for an old white guy who knew 200,000 to 300,000 words when he described what satire is. And so, as I say, I hoped that people like Barbara Boxer, George Bush, Jimmy Carter, Dick Cheney, Jacques Chirac at the time, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Katie Coron Couric, Maureen Dowd, Dianne Feinstein, Newt Gingrich, Ruth Gator Ginsburg, Rudy Giuliani, Al Gore, Jesse Jackson, Kim Jong-il, John Kerry, Larry King, Rush Limbaugh, and others. And they're all listed in here. It was an equal opportunity book of satire. And I said, welcome to our real national zoo. So as you could see, now you know why I'm not allowed on Fox News, because of the leprechaun's thin skin. Leprechauns allegedly have very thin skin. Anyway, Paul, I get the drift, which is you like the satire, and you have to get in the mood to do it right, Paul. That's what I'm trying to say.
And nobody does it better than you, Mike.
Okay, well, I hope you'll be with me come January, because people asked me this week, oh, what are you going to do on the opening day? Oh, what are you going to do on the opening day? You must be nervous. I said, what do you mean, what am I going to do? I've been in the radio business 20 years. It's like the old Jackie Mason joke. He said, yeah, oh, you're an overnight success. Yeah, I've been in toilets for 20 years. Now all of a sudden they discovered me. It's unlike the first night of my show is not January 1st, 2014. I've been doing it for since 1994. Because the people will finally hear the guy say, wow, that's amazing. I thought they were all like rigid, you know, Republican talking points guys. Well, God bless them. We need that. We need everything. We need a, you know, variety act out there. It's like, you know, 10 different acts. I'm just another act in the circus of life. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm thinking about reincarnation. How do you believe in that? You want to believe in it, but what's the whole point of it if you can't remember who you were? I mean, that's what I don't understand. It's nice to believe that if you're a nice person, you come back in a nice way. And if you're bad, you come back as, you know, a bad way. But if you don't remember who you were and what you did, now let's say you're a rat. You think the rat runs around and says, man, I shouldn't have been that Democrat politician back in America when we passed the Obamacare Act. He's not going to remember that. The rat doesn't remember that. He just wants the cheese. He wanted it as a Democrat and he wants it as a rat. So what's the difference? In other words, what's the good of reincarnation if you don't remember it? That's the part that bewilders me. There's like, oh, if you're good, you know, he's like Santa Claus. Oh, if you're good, you're going to be rewarded, my son. All right, yeah, right. That's where the cynicism comes in. You start to say, how could you believe in that? Reincarnation, you shall rise. You'll come back in a superior form. You'll be your poodle next in your next life. If you're really good, you'll be a poodle. If you're really bad, you'll be an ant, let's say. An ant is somewhere, a horrible place with no ant food. But if you don't remember what you did as a Democrat, what's the good of being punished and coming back as an ant? That's the part I don't understand. Andrea in Philadelphia, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's Andrea the Savagette.
Thank you.
I can't wait till you go to drive time. I'm so exhausted listening to you every night.
Oh, you mean you stay up that way? You'll be able to at least get a night's sleep once I'm on a drive. That's funny.
I can't wait. But I have an idea for your first week. I loved when you did Animal Farm and 1984 when you talked about Newspeak right on the news. It was so good, relevant for today for new people.
Right, so we'll look up the archives of reading Animal Farm in light of today's work. And I thank you for the call. Here's an interesting article that I caught today. I will tell you why. Look, headline. What's in your spices, bug parts and rat hair? Ooh, that caught my attention. What's in your spices, bug parts and rat hair? And an FDA report on imported spices finds some of them are contaminated with bug parts and salmonella. Great. You may not know this, but I was a very esteemed writer of health books before I became a talk radio host. And you know, one of my earliest books was called Bugs in the Peanut Butter. And it was a children's nutrition book. Would you believe it? I remember that. I was so proud of that book. I wrote it, who knows when, a long time ago. Little Brown & Company, at the time a very important publisher of great prestige in Boston, published it, Bugs in the Peanut Butter. In fact, it was so good, it won one of the awards for Best Science Book of the Year. You don't know any of that about me, because all you do is read Wikipedia, which is all lies. You may inadvertently be getting more than you bargained for when you put paprika in your chicken paprikash. A new FDA report, Pathogens and Filth and Spices, says that 12% of U.S. spice imports are contaminated with bug parts, rodent hairs, and other ingredients more appropriate to a witch's brew than your mother's favorite recipe. The FDA study also found that 7% of spice imports, the inspectors examined, were contaminated with salmonella. Great. So this filth is very simple to avoid. Don't buy foreign spices. You know, there are American growers who grow organic spices. You can use them. Why buy spices from India, for example? I like the Indian people. Doesn't mean I have to eat their spices. See, but now here we go again. Again, it led right back to the Indian buffet. So I'm eating rodent hairs now with the curry and a bug part? Ugh. Oh, it's awful. What am I going to wind up left with here? I can't even go to an Indian buffet now. I'm going to think about bug parts and rodent hairs in the chicken kakalalala. The chicken kakalalala.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Studies show you have a better chance of living longer if you eat a Mediterranean diet, drink a glass of red wine every day, enjoy gardening, live on a mountain, or are a woman. You'll live longer if you work near indoor plants, are Hispanic, and floss often. If you live in the country, do lots of yoga, are a married person and have four or more children. If you occasionally indulge in dark chocolate and are right-handed. If you get along with your mother, have a younger mother, have a name that starts with A, and if you have a pet. So, it's simple. If you happen to be a buff, right-handed, yodeling, country mama's girl, enophile named Anna, with a green thumb, a sweet tooth, a full house, and an unwavering respect for proper dental hygiene, then you could live longer.
It's an ad from an insurance company. I couldn't help but play it. It was very clever. Here's a question for all of you who are doubting Thomas is out there. We know about the LAX shooting, right? Do you think this shooting will be exploited by Obama to arm TSA agents so that he can finally have his private army that he's been looking for since his early days in Chicago? Now, why do I say such an incendiary thing? Well, here's why. Because there have been reports for a while that, going back to Big Sis, that the Department of Homeland and Security had been hiring shooting ranges near airports in order to train TSA agents. So wouldn't that give you the idea that she was planning to give the screeners firearms in order to create that private security force that answers to nobody but Obama? I mean, it's a logical question. Right away, one of the schmucks in the media, one of the, forget his name, the Schmendrick, Williams of some kind? I don't know. Anyone by the name of Williams I don't trust. NBC News' Pete Williams said the LAX shooter had strong anti-government views. You got to hear this. Listen to this lunacy in clip 5.
As for the motive, I mean, we're a long way from knowing that for certain. There is some indication, we're told, that he had strong anti-government views. That's based on some written material that we're told he was carrying that they found on him after he was shot by LA Airport police.
Okay,
he is said to be
right
in critical
condition. How much do they pay a guy like Pete Williams a year to put out government propaganda? They make a good living. He's NBC. They have unlimited slush funds since, say, they Parent company, GE, takes in over $5 billion. Domestic pays no taxes. That's a lot of money to spread around amongst the people who read for them. Pete Williams, LAX shooter, had strong anti-government views. You hear? That's unbelievable to me. How do they know that? Then at first they said he was a TSA worker. Then they said he wasn't a TSA worker. Then listen, this idiot, Pete Williams, goes on in clip 7 to say he doesn't know if he had strong anti-government views. This is what passes for news today. Clip 7.
No indication that we can find that this person was on any kind of known list of people with strong anti-government views. None of the groups that track these organizations say that they have heard of him. He was not in any kind of federal watch list or database or name, you know, list of names of people that have known anti-government views.
You went
views.
To your friends in that bogus organization that calls any Christian a terrorist? Who'd you go to, your buddies down in the Southern Poverty Law Center filled with the most demented people on the planet? Only under Obama could they be a reliable source having a list of people as terrorists. To me, the people in the Southern Poverty Law Center are terrorists for what they've done to this country. To me, every member of the ACLU is a terrorist. But then, okay, it's a different way of looking at the world. You thought you had democracy? Yeah, right. Yep. What is this? Is it a soundbite from me? No good. So that's it. That's the world we live in. That's the world we live in. I tell you what I want to do right now. I'll tell you what's very important to do. Even though it's late on a Friday night across America, and people are in a post-Halloween depression. They party themselves out. They're probably, I'm staying in tonight. I had enough last night. Sane person stays home after work tonight, gets in a pair of pajamas and watches a television show, or whatever they do. They listen to me, then they watch a TV show. An insane person goes out and parties again tonight. And they started with, oh, the hair of the dog. Yeah, get back to me when you're 50 with that attitude. It's good to do when you're 20. But get back to me when the merry-go-round stops, when your lips are gone and your bones are gone. My lips are still here, my bones are still here. I know how to party, believe me. But even you have to understand, you can't do it 7 nights a week. I want you to hear why I oppose amnesty. It's a very important thing. Or I'll tell you the truth, to change the pace, on Tuesday night I did a whole show on sex addiction. It was a very interesting show. Let's play clip 2 instead. The sex addiction show was missed by almost all. And one of my best throwaway shows in history. Let's play clip 2 on The Savage Nation. If I have to hear the word Obamacare one more time, I may start breaking computers and keyboards. I can't take it anymore. You see, the Democrats say everything's fine. The site is good. It's going to be fixed. And we're going to have wonderful health care for all, even though they know they're lying. And the Republicans and their hacks are saying it's terrible. It's not working. It'll never work. So the battle lines are drawn, you see. Now, you know where I stand. There's no point in my telling you again, but there's no context in any of this. The context that I'm talking about is let's put things in terms of real human tragedy. Let's talk about real human tragedy so that we don't complain about our measly little pathetic lives. What's wrong with our measly little pathetic lives? And let's see what I'm talking about. I was reading a review of Mike Tyson's new book, From Champ to Drug and Sex Addict, Tyson Tells All. And there's apparently a new book coming out, and I don't know when it's out or what. Oh, here it is. Undisputed Truth, blah, blah. Oh, forthcoming memoir, Undisputed Truth by Blue Rider Press. And I was reading about Mike Tyson. I was always a huge fan of Mike Tyson. I think he was the greatest brawler I've ever seen in the ring. I know he was unfairly sent to prison in Indiana. I know that was pure racism, and I defended him when it happened. Of course, I don't need credits for it. I always admired the man because he came from garbage. The garbage-strewn streets of Bedford-Stuyvesant. He came from the lowest of the low, and he knew how to put people into a coma, and he put people into a coma to get where he was. That's all he knew. And then I read about what happened to him later on, and that was his drug addiction and his sex addiction. And I was interested in that because I wanted to ask my audience here on the Savage Nation if you know anything about sex addiction. We hear about it. And is it real? I mean, what is sex addiction? What actually is sex addiction? Is there actually a disease called sex addiction? Aren't those who involve in sex all the time just luckier than you because they're more attractive or more macho and they can get women? Why call that sex addiction? What is sex addiction? How do you cure something that may be natural? I don't understand what that is, actually. Is there anyone out there who is a sex addict or was a sex addict So let me go to a website, because I don't know much about this. It says, the sign you're a sex addict refers to compromising your relationship with your girlfriend or wife, but it can easily extend to social and work circles. You may cheat, be deceptive, or be untrue to yourself and your partner in a variety of ways. Being unfaithful doesn't just mean having sexual contact with another person. It can be demonstrated in other ways like, here we go, regularly visiting strip clubs or X-rated movie theaters without your partner's knowledge. That would be internet porn today. More signs you're a sex addict. Next page. Well, do I have to go to the next page for the more signs? You can do it yourself. Just go to the internet and Google it. And then you'll find out that you need to go to a therapist again. If you can't get excitement out of sex with the same person, you might desire or attempt to seek out more exciting encounters. This could lead you down a dangerous trail of constantly needing different stimuli to gain satisfaction or relief. If you've never satisfied with the standard lovemaking session with your partner every now and again, your sexuality is suffering. Frequently seeking out sexual variety is often indicative of an out-of-control sexual problem. Who wrote this? You may be engaging in many activities that are illegal in most places, such as sex with prostitutes, sex with minors, exhibitionism. Some activities might not be criminal offensive, but they're offensive nonetheless. Voyeurism, indecent phone calls, etc. If your sex life is getting you into trouble, this might be a sign you're a sex addict. Sex should not get you into trouble, especially legal trouble. Okay. So, you have negative feelings about your behavior. X-rated addiction. Stuff like that. So, anybody have anything to say, or should we move on to another topic? Anything but Obama. Anything except Obama, please. Please spare me my 4-million-year-old brain. My 4-million-year-old brain cannot function if we talk about Obama for one more second. I'll leave it to the other geniuses in the media. Let them do it. They eat, sleep, and drink the word Obama. In the middle of the night, instead of having sexual thoughts, they dream about Obama and how he's destroying America. Instead of having sex with their wives or girlfriends, they can't. They think only about Obamacare. Every time they have a lustful thought, it's completely obliterated by a thought of the rules and regulations of Obamacare and the EPA. You see what I'm saying? That too can become an obsession. That may need treatment. That could require antidepressants for all I know.
Savage.
I believe there could be a time in the very near future that the obsession with Obama, the destroyer, could be entered into the DSM as an illness. And under Obamacare, you'll have to be given medication by a nurse who looks like Catherine Sebelius in your worst nightmare. She'll come to your home and administer an antipsychotic medication if you think obsessively about how Obama's destroying America. Keep laughing. Go ahead. Chinese state media show plans for nuke strikes on U.S. cities. And they have aircraft carriers. Submarines, sorry. Chinese state media show plans for nuke strikes on U.S. cities. Did you hear this story? Oh, you didn't hear that? Didn't make it to your local paper? You're busy reading about Obama's takeover of global warming. I see. Inside China, nuclear submarines capable of widespread attack on U.S. And they're talking about it, no less. The People's Liberation Army Navy Strategic Submarine Force. They say they're now ready and able, I swear to God, to hit Seattle and Los Angeles. And they show damage projections for Seattle and Los Angeles after being hit by Chinese nukes. And the deadly radiation that would spread all the way to Chicago. Now, why would they be doing this now? Why would China be putting out such a crazed message right now? How is that? This China's subfleet is reportedly the world's second largest with about 70 vessels. About 10 are nuclear powered. And now they're writing articles talking about striking the United States. They're capable of it. Why? There must be a reason that China is doing this right now. Listen to what else they write. Because the Midwest states of the U.S. are sparsely populated, in order to increase the lethality of our nuclear attacks, they should mainly target the key cities on the west coast of the United States, such as Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and San Diego, the Global Times said. The 12 JL-2 nuclear warheads carried by one single type 094 SSBN can kill and wound 5 million to 12 million Americans, the Global Times reported. China has also developed land-based intercontinental ballistic missiles, notably the DF-31A, which has a range of 7,000 to 7,500 miles. Now, why are they putting out this story now? See, it's late at night, but I saved it for the best. Why are they trying to freak us out right now? Why? Tell me why. As we speak, we have Chinese and Russian troops in this country being trained by our military, as I speak to you. Our traitorous government is training Chinese and Russian troops. They've given them the keys to our kingdom. What are they doing, preparing their people for war with the United States? How is this possible? How is this possible? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing it right now? What in the world do you think they're saying? Why they're not going to do this, but why are they threatening this right now? There's something wrong here. My gut feeling, if you put me against the wall and said come up with an idea, would be that they're getting ready to do something on Taiwan, and they don't want the United States to react. They're trying to freak out the generals in America. There may be a few generals left. Obama got rid of most of them. Obama, like Stalin, has purged our combat generals over the last few months in a way that it would be astonishing if you actually knew what I'm saying to you. Whatever. Okay. You don't want to hear any of that. But that's truly what's going on. Now, how did the Chinese get the ability to launch a missile that is so accurate that they could say with certainty they could strike Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and San Diego? Where did they get the technology? Shall I tell you? I'll give you the names, if you'd like, of the people who I believe should be tried for treason. Would you like their names? Let me go back to the Clinton administration. It all started in the Clinton administration. You see, our friends in China were having trouble launching satellites. Their rockets were falling down, crashing, and they couldn't launch satellites. So they went to a dear friend of Bill Clinton, who owned a company called Loral Space and Technology. And Loral Space and Technology, I think, was owned by a Bernie Schwartz, if I'm not mistaken, who was the largest single donor to the Democrat National Committee. And old Bernie asked permission from Bill Clinton to give China the ability to launch satellites, you know, innocent weather satellites. That's all the Chinese wanted. Now, some of us said, wait a minute. Some generals said, wait a minute. Some generals said, wait a minute, they'll convert it to military use. But old Bernie Schwartz, being the good American that he is, said, nah, you right-wingers are crazy. And lo and behold, soon the Chinese got technology from old Bernie Schwartz, which he got for free, by the way, from the U.S. government research. And old Bernie shared it with his friends in China to launch weather satellites. And all was well in Freedom Land. And then slowly but surely, our good friends in China decided to say, you know what, I think we will use those rockets to launch munitions. And nobody said anything, of course, because at that point, they were a big trading partner. And you didn't want to insult a trading partner. And so, slowly but surely, they kept practicing with our technology until, lo and behold, they could launch a nuclear missile from old Bernie Schwartz's missiles. Well, it's not his missiles per se, but he did give them the technology. But that's how Democrats operate. Then they tell you they're patriotic, and anyone who criticizes them is a crazy anti-government lunatic. See, that's how it works. Now, you think this is McCarthyism and lunacy because you don't even understand what's reality. And that's why I wrote a book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. The fact of the matter is it is a mental disorder. You are mad hatters. All of you liberals are mad hatters. You have no idea the world you live in. You have no idea what communism really is. You have no idea what real life is. But I don't want to say any more. I don't want to say any more because the madness in this country is almost and is systemic, never mind endemic. It is almost systemic rather than endemic. I don't think the Chinese have to fire a single missile to take the country over. As a Chinese friend said to me, I said, you know, one day China's going to take us over. She laughed and she said, what do you mean one day? Right? Yeah. You know, they own the economy. What do they need to fire a missile for? They'll keep us alive as long as we're still consumers. Then once that day passes, forget about it. They'll see if they can harvest your kidneys and send them back to Beijing for some, internet billionaire. Chris in Milwaukee on the internet. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Just wanted to say thank you for the great program you put on every night. I look forward to it more than probably anything during my day.
Well, thank you. So what's on your mind quickly?
Yes, I was, as soon as you mentioned bugs on the peanut butter, I had to go to eBay and see if somebody had it up there. And sure enough, the book was up there, and I think it was for buy it now of $25. I thought it was.
Well, if someone tries to rip it off as they did one of my earlier books, they're going to hear from my lawyer. Don't rip it off. That's all I can tell you. I have some reprint thieves out there who've stolen some of my early great work. They'll hear from old Dan H. very soon. I'll be right back. Thank you, sir.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So it's a little light story, a light story, that China's now saying they can wipe out all the cities on the West Coast with their nuclear submarines, thanks to the DNC and other fine people who believed in multiculturalism and sharing. The university people who brought them over and put them into our universities, taught them nuclear physics. Thank you very much. Joel on WABC, welcome to the program.
Yeah. Michael, the biggest blunder we've ever made, the United States government, is giving away the internet instead of, internationally speaking, instead of holding on to it for the Pentagon, for the government, or at the very most, letting it be used only within the United States for us. Now, the internet has caused the most damage to this country.
Well, but Joel, that's too late to do anything about that. Who developed the internet? Al Gore did, didn't he?
No, we developed it. The Pentagon.
I thought Al Gore did. I thought he invented the internet.
No, of course.
Hey, on a serious note, Joel, do you know who the father of rocketry was? It was Goddard in America, an American scientist who developed the ability to fire rockets. And the U.S. abandoned him in the 30s. You know who picked up all of his writings? The Nazi scientist bought the patents for a few cents. And through Goddard's pioneering research, an American, the Nazis advanced further than any other country on Earth and developed a V-1 and V-2 and almost a V-12 rocket. Would you believe it? It's history repeating itself.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Well, 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 we made it to hour number three this Friday, November 1, 2013. Thanksgiving is just around the corner, then Christmas, then New Year's, and then the next year, the next, the next, the next, the next. That's why I oppose amnesty. I want my next year. I am an immigrant son. I am hammering this every day. You want to hear 6 minutes of me on why you should oppose amnesty? Your talking points? Go to michaelsavage.com. LAX shooting. Suspected gunman sends suicide-related text to his family. A nut. A nut. Meanwhile, the crazy liberal judge, Judith Sheindlin in New York City, who attacked the police force and ended stop and frisk, which cut crime, well, she got a kick in the boot today. Or shall I say, she got booted in the booty. Another court blocked her and booted the judge on the stop and frisk. An appeals court overrode the liberal fanatic. Hey, what's in your spices, bug parts and rat hair? You know, in 1970-something, I wrote a book called Bugs in the Peanut Butter for children. Did you know that? Yeah, I swear to you. Bugs in the Peanut Butter. It's come around. Inside China, nuclear submarines capable of widespread attack on the United States. Oh, wow. Well, Obama must be on top of that because he just passed an executive order on making certain that we can only get staged propaganda photos of the Great One. And he took over climate change with the stroke of a pen. I swear to God, this is the world you're living in. Yes, I'm telling you, I'm not making it up. Meanwhile, an airport employee was fired over an alleged insult to Islam. Did you hear this story? Did you hear what he actually said? Okay, I got your attention. Heathrow employee sacked over alleged insult to Islam. What did he do? I don't know. No had a halawi. Learned that in today's Britain, you better not be perceived as having insulted Islam at work because it could ruin your life. She worked at the cosmetics counter in the duty-free zone into London's Heathrow Airport for 13 years. But when Halawi ran afoul of a Muslim go-workers, she was effectively fired. I didn't say anything wrong. I was complimenting a colleague of mine. Halawi, a Christian from Lebanon, was having a conversation in Arabic with a co-worker and praising a Muslim colleague when it was misinterpreted by another Muslim as an insult. We were talking about something else, and I said, well, everyone is not like you. You are such an Alawi, which means man of God in any religion, she explained. And unbeknownst to me, my accuser was standing quite close by, and he started jumping and shouting in front of colleagues, screaming, you're insulting Islam. And she lost her job. Can you believe this? There's no England anymore. There's no England anymore. It is a nightmare, and it's coming to a neighborhood near you. They are catering to Muslims around the world. Of course, England used to be the homeland exclusively for upright people. They drank tea. They're very civilized. They tried to teach some manners to the colonies that they had established all over the world by managing their natural and human resources. They gave us the Magna Carta. But now that the British Empire is no more, the barbarians are at the gates. Is it any wonder that England's once civil and relatively safe society is degenerating into some Sharia law state that stones women for being seen with a man who's not a spouse or family member? That's the world, according to me. Anyway, I want to talk about 10 reasons to oppose amnesty again today. I'm going to give you the 10 reasons why you must oppose amnesty, no matter who you are, no matter what your race is, no matter what your economic status is. Because only Zuckerface, only people like Mark Zuckerface can think we think he's compassionate. Only Mark Zuckerface thinks that we think he's compassionate. The undershirt-wearing Ganef, who runs Facebook, in my opinion. But, of course, he's in favor of amnesty because we learned last night in the Savage Nation that he did a deal with the devil. The devil said to him, you back amnesty for the low-wage workers, and we'll grant you more H-1B visas so you can bring in computer programmers that'll work for one-third the rate that you'd have to pay American workers. So that's why Mark Zuckerface is so popular. Obama uses executive order and sweeping takeover of the nation's climate change policies. Oh, well, another road to slavery. The TSA employee, what can you say about it? A nut. A nut came with a gun and got through the thing and started shooting. What else is in the news? There's a lot in the news. I mean, you want me to talk about the, what I told you? I'll do that. Or you could do the open mic job if you want. 855-472-82. Where is everybody? It's always Friday's murder. Friday is a murderous night for radio. It's horrible. I'll be honest with you. I can't wait to go to 12 to 3 already. At least people will be awake. Climate power grab. Obama uses exec order and sweeping policy takeover. President dictator signs an executive order that allows him to take control of climate change policies in a move that could skirt legislative oversight and push a federal agenda on states as he seeks to better prepare for events like Superstorm Sandy. In other words, he's a dictator. The Europeans are calling him a soft totalitarian, is what they're calling him, but it did make it to your local paper. We all know it's hocus pocus. Hocus pocus lemony ocus. Hocus pocus. So he's taken it over with a few governors. You want to hear the names of the governors who are on his committee? They're all far-left radical Democrats. Do I have to read their names? I'll read you the names of the people who believe in global warming while scientists don't. Most rational scientists understand it's a complete fraud. Complete fraud. They know that it's nothing. The so-called task force includes, you ready for this? Here we go. Let's get the checklist out. Governor Jerry Brown of California, surprise. Neil Abercrombie of Hawaii, surprise. Delaware Governor Jack Markell, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn, and Jay Inslee of Washington. All radical leftists. All radical leftists. All lining up to cash in on the trillions of dollars on this fraud called global warming. Don't call me on it. No, I don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to talk about it. Oh, they took all of my raisins. Yes, they did eat all the raisins. I'm one of those guys who would not put candy in the bucket. And one of them did kick the bucket at the end because there were no raisins left. It was on the a floor outside my garage. They took the little boxes of Newman's raisins. I love them. I shouldn't say them. They're the brand. They should advertise. They would never. A liberal company like that. No, I'm too American. Why don't they advertise raisins in China? All right, I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
dealer's choice. So where did Halloween come from? When I say borders, language, and culture, you think I'm like a stick in the mud, you know, all the Bible. Well, even Halloween is part of our culture, and it's European in origin. And I don't know about you, I'm not so quick to want to throw it in the garbage. Many people believe that it derives from the ancient Celtic holiday of Samhain. And many of the traditions that we celebrate on Halloween stem from the Celtic Gaelic culture, by the way. Celtic Gaelic culture. You know, old European stuff that the liberals seem to hate. You know that? Samhain, which means November in Irish, was the end of summer and the harvest season in the Celtic calendar. And that's when towns made preparations for winter. I'm reading now from Halloween's Irish History, Samhain Harvest Festival, in the Washington Times by Connor Higgins. It was a fascinating article. So it was a harvest festival. And it was the last great feast held outdoors before the cold months came, which is interesting because in the neighborhood I'm in, they had a fire going in someone's driveway and they're cooking meat, and the kids ran over saying, ooh, tri-tip. Tri-tip, it's better than candy. The mother probably had starving him on a vegetarian diet. The poor little boy was dying for a little testosterone. On the surface, it was a celebration of the harvest preparations, blah, blah, blah. Now listen to this. You see, the Celts believed that on Samhain, the veil between the living and the dead was dropped for one day, and the spirits of the living could intermingle with the spirits of the dead. It's also been speculated that this feast of Halloween, derived from the Celtic holiday, was a celebration of the dead that had lost, that the dead that they had lost since the last Samhain. This would include warriors lost in battle, children lost at birth, the old and the sick. All of the dead from the year would be celebrated. It's interesting that the Mexican Day of the Dead has some of this in it. In a strange note, the Mexicans take it to another level. They actually go to the graveyard with food and lay down there. I'm not ready for that part of it. I mean, to me, walking the streets and looking at candles as far as I'll go. But all right, to each his own. To each his own. So there's a little overlap here. That's not so bad. I mean, and you think about it. Mexican music derives, the music we hear today is largely Germanic from when the Germans colonized Mexico. So they're good. I'll go halfway on that one. Even the jack-o'-lantern is reputed to have roots in Celtic mythology. Jack-o'-lantern, you know, the Halloween thing, or Stingy Jack, was the rogue of rogues of Irish mythology. Stingy Jack, a drifter, derelict, and a drunkard, was overheard by the devil talking about how he had tricked Lightstone and drank his way through life. The devil, always up for a challenge, wanted to see just how good Jack was. To make a medium short story, Jack met the devil, got him drunk, and tricked him into giving him 10 more years. 10 years later, Jack tricked the devil again into never taking his soul to hell. When Jack died, heaven refused to take him, and when Jack went down to hell to try to gain entrance, the devil politely reminded him of their deal. Instead, the devil gave Jack an ember of hell and a hollow gourd for a lantern to illuminate a pathway through the netherworld. And so when the veil between the living and the dead is dropped on this holiday, which I can never remember, Samhain, a tough language, we can see Stingy Jack of the Lantern, Jack-o'-Lantern, trying to get into heaven or hell. It's very interesting. I didn't know that. Just smell pumpkin. To this day, I can remember carving pumpkins with the kids. I always liked the smell of a pumpkin. We threw the seeds out like idiots. Little did I know there was zinc, prostate. Had I only known, I would have eaten the seeds as a kid. Well, I did eat a lot of pumpkin seeds. Sure, they sold them in machines. Today they sell Adderall in machines for children. I'm surprised they don't have condom machines in grade school, in the government grade schools, along with Adderall machines, where if a kid feels edgy or not edgy enough, he just can put a debit card in from Obamacare, and they can get an Adderall shot. Maybe it's coming soon with the new Obamacare, because after all, our children are so important. So the children, the spirits, that is a tough language. I try, of all the languages, I don't know one word of Gaelic. I had an Irish friend who owned an Irish bar, and they would speak to me. I had no idea. It has no roots in anything that I could understand. You know, you listen to someone in Portuguese, you pick up a word here and there. Italian, you can get a word or two. Because, you know, the Latin root. But Celtic, good God, had a dog. An Irish wolfhound, I love that dog. And they only live to 6. That's the heartbreak. The bigger the dog, the less they live. How does that work? Is that true with men, too? the bigger the man, the faster they, the young, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Little guys live longer, apparently. Little dogs, too. Why is that? Why do little dogs live longer than big dogs? I don't understand. It's heartbreaking. You know, you lose a dog that's 165 pounds, like losing a friend. Horrible thing. When he would bolt from that Irish bar, we'd be drinking a beer. The dog would lay there in the sawdust, not moving a muscle. It was so big. The dog's head was frighteningly large. It was the size of my dog now. My whole dog is smaller than that dog's head. I'd love to have Irish wolfhounds. You think about the derivation of the wolfhound. They killed wolves. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine a pack of dogs trained to kill wolves? And I remember now, I went to a dog show a couple of years ago, and I saw collars that were made for wolfhounds that had spikes on them. That was pretty amazing. These were the Turkish wolfhounds, I think. I forget the breed. They would hide amongst the sheep, and the Turks would make spiked collars out of real steel. I'm not talking Polk Street here. I'm not talking about the Folsom Street Fair. I'm talking about spiked collars made of steel. You know, primitive, what do you call it? The blacksmith would make them. And they would have real deep spikes, you know, long spikes, 2-3 inches. And the dogs would hide amongst the sheep. And when the wolves would come to kill the sheep, the wolfhound would strike. And to protect their neck, they had the collars on, very much like our leather necks were protected by leather from the Muslim pirates in the early days, as I told you that story. It's very interesting how, you know, life and art and animals. Here's some good news. Here's something the government did right. I mean, we got our money's worth with this story. Officials say the U.S. drone killed a Pakistani Taliban leader. That's not bad. That's not a bad story. We got our money's worth. We got something out of our taxes. A U.S. drone strike Friday killed Hakmullah Muqsood, the leader of the Pakistan Taliban, and a major blow to the group that came after the government said it started peace talks with the insurgents. Muqsood, who was on a U.S. most wanted terrorist list with a $5 million bounty, is believed to have been behind a deadly suicide attack at a CIA base in Afghanistan, a failed car bombing in New York's Times Square. Oh! The ruthless 34-year-old commander, who was closely aligned with Al-Qaeda, was widely reported to have been killed in 2010, but they got him. So the girls with the little computers in there down there below in Virginia, wherever they are, Florida, they're with the video games, they got the guy. I like the show Homeland that shows that. Is that based on reality? The girls in nice clothing, great bodies. They sit down there with computers killing people all over the world. Not a bad job. If you can't get a job on Fox News, I guess you can just kill people with drones. It's probably the second best thing. WMAL, Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage. You've been asking this week, why keep talking about the administration and everything that's going on? I do believe that you single-handedly stopped the administration's attack on Syria. I mean,
well, that's a very, very noble sentiment. I don't believe I did it. I did talk against it repeatedly for day on end. I was almost foaming at my mouth over the insanity of bombing a sovereign nation for no reason whatsoever other than to move someone's commercial interests. But weren't there others?
Well, no, not at first. I do believe not at first. I believe they would have, in fact, if you wouldn't have screamed that for 2-3 days straight, that Friday night, I believe they would have attacked.
Well, I'd like to believe I had some effect. I think where you're going with this is, therefore, that's why I should talk about Obamacare?
That's why, sir, I believe that you should constantly be screaming, since you have a show in which you could let the American people know what's going on. This, above all times, is, I believe, is more crucial. Yeah,
well, I do, but you see, I've changed my focus from Obamacare, because it is the law and it is falling apart on its own volition, to attacking amnesty, which Obama's working on. I want to stop it before he makes it into law. I want to scare the hell out of the Republicans and tell them they will be thrown out. The party will disintegrate if they go along with those criminals. That's the topic we should be focused on. My cohorts in talk radio, God bless them all, they're still arguing about something they lost.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
You're just a dumb, stupid peasant slave that works for me, paying taxes.
No.
You're like the bees in a hive.
Yeah.
You make the honey and I steal it. And I put it in jars and use it any way I want. And you little bees, you keep making that honey.
Bees in the trap. Bees in the trap.
You bees keep making that honey. You work for me, Barack Obama, so I can go on vacation and spit on you. I can go wherever I want and spit on you with my haughty demeanor. And I'll get away with it because there is no press and there is no Republican Party.
The Savage Nation. Weeknights at 6 on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Disney landscaping every bell and whistle you could possibly imagine. that's going up in Shanghai. And we have to note that there is a little history between Disney and China over the years. I believe that Disney first introduced some of its cartoons, mainly Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse, who are known, or were known anyway, as Old Duck Tang and Mickey Me. And in these cartoons, I believe this was in the late 60s, they were speaking in Mandarin Chinese. Well, we have come a long way since then, because Disney is opening, is going to build these stores and open them. They are heralding them as this magnificent alliance between China, a huge economic opportunity, cultural moment, all those wonderful feel-good types of things. But then, just a few days later, here comes another report. And I will cite some of my sources here. This is the Global Times. This is Inside China analyst Miles Yu. Here's what the six major China state media outlets are announcing. They are announcing the awesomeness. That is a direct quote from the state media. This includes the People's Daily, China Central TV. They're announcing the awesomeness of the nuclear submarine fleet in China. Now, here's the takeaway. They have announced that they are now on routine strategic patrol, and they have in mind a way to keep the United States from being powerful in the Pacific region. That's the very short, simple way to put it, but here's the takeaway on this. In the Global Times report, which did have access to some of the Chinese documents, 12 million Americans may be at risk because these nuclear submarines are capable of striking cities like Seattle, L.A., your own San Francisco, San Diego. And also we find out that long-range ICBMs are part of the arsenal. East Coast targets include New York City, Boston, etc. And it is just a moment where you wonder what we should pay attention to. On the one hand, we have Disney, and also Hollywood is very interested in China, both as an audience and as a economic resource. And on the other hand, we find out that the awesomeness of China's nuclear submarine fleet is now being discussed openly in the People's Daily, China Central TV, and talking about possible targets like Seattle, L.A., San Francisco. I don't know what to make of it, but it certainly deserves some attention from the American people.
Have you heard any rumblings on this? Is anyone concerned?
Well, I think certainly, of course, our military folks are never not looking at China. They are always aware of China, and I think it's something that the United States has to strike a balance with. Yes, they're a fantastic possible economic resource. They are very creative people, and indeed, they've taken huge interest in our own culture. There are Chinese fashion shows now, Chinese fashion coming to New York and so forth. But on the other hand, we have to remember that the Cold War may not be over.
We have heard about how the NSA has been spying on us as well as our allies. What do the latest polls show? Are the ignorant liberals awakening from their ambient sleep?
You have to ask the question, do allies and enemies alike spy on U.S. leaders like we've heard about ad nauseum perhaps in the press lately? And American voters themselves now agree that all the clandestine stuff, this is a reality of life these days, and the majority of Americans agree that, yes, even our allies spy, and this is the exact word spy, is used in this poll, spy on U.S. leadership. This is coming from The Economist and YouGov, and they actually surveyed registered voters. That's the kind of a poll you pay attention to, just conducted October 26, 28. And here's some of these numbers. 50% of registered U.S. voters say that the United Kingdom either probably or definitely spies on American leadership. And right down the line, 59% say the same of Germany, 58% say that of France, 79% say the same about Iran, and of course 80% say the same for China, as well as Russia. Now, we have to also wonder about, there was a lot of anger, of reported anger from global leaders regarding the possible NSA or the NSA targeting of their private cell phone conversations. And about 30% of these respondents felt that the world leaders were, quote, truly angry over this news. And you, they also think that some of these global leaders were posturing for the media. About 20% of these respondents said that the vexed leaders were posturing for the media. And, well, 28% of Republicans and 19% of Democrats agree. And in the end, Michael, there is a little manners, a little civility involved. Gotta quote that. 53% of the voters overall think President Obama should apologize for all of the phone incidents. It's just another political cultural intersection here, but it also shows that Americans are paying attention. They are looking at whether or not our allies are looking at us also.
It seems Hillary Clinton has been anointed as the next Democrat candidate. Do you have a little different twist on this?
Well, let's go back 6 months ago, and we would see our former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, was having her What Difference at This Point Does It Make? That was the famous meltdown moment before Congress when she was addressing Benghazi only 6 months ago. We have to look at Mrs. Clinton now, and everybody would probably notice that she's very polished, very confident. She's very almost joyous in her demeanor, very cheerful, beautiful new hairdo. All of that type of, those types of political trappings. It's a lot of political posturing that goes on. She has a new book coming out, yet another memoir in which her publisher, Simon & Schuster, says that she will be giving her ideas about how the United States will go forward in the 21st century. But then, gosh, we go to an NBC Wall Street Journal survey, which is finding that Hillary Clinton's public image has slumped. That's directly from the poll. In recent months with younger voters, with Democrats, with independents, they are less enthusiastic. This is what the poll is reporting. And traditionally, Mrs. Clinton got very good favorability ratings, usually in the 50s, 56%, 57%, very healthy rating, consistently healthy ratings, and this has since dropped into the 40s. And people pay attention, particularly when there's an effort by a larger-than-life political entity to reconfirm that they are still players, and suddenly, well, what happened? My gosh, the numbers are going down. And even a Democratic pollster told the Wall Street Journal, why is this happening? Well, this is what Peter Hart had to say. He said, pure and simple, she's gone from being the nonpartisan Secretary of State to potentially a partisan Democratic nominee for president. So I guess the takeaway message is, Michael, that all is not what it seems. You can be anointed in the media. You can be anointed by political strategists. But I think the greater indication is that Americans are not done thinking about Benghazi. In fact, gosh, I hate to go back to another poll, but sometimes these numbers are very telling. 79% of likely U.S. voters say it is still important to find out exactly what happened during those terrorist attacks on Benghazi. And another 43% think that the Benghazi issue will have a negative impact on Hillary Clinton's campaign for president. That's coming from a Rasmussen report also conducted this week of likely voters.
Speaking of political figures, you reported on a story on what Arnold Schwarzenegger has been doing.
Yeah, what are you doing with the next California governor? Well, actually, he's doing a whole lot, as you and most of your listeners probably know. He's still an active movie star. He's got a new movie out there. He's still a bodybuilder. He's got a new line of nutritional products out there. He's a now-and-then policy wonk. Don't know if people know, but there is the Schwarzenegger Institute at the University of Southern California. They're constantly having political forums, drawing even global leaders there to talk about all kinds of stuff. But little mom in here, Arnold Schwarzenegger came to Washington this week, and he was made, or anointed, I guess, a forest ranger, an honorary forest ranger. There was actually a ceremony at the U.S. Forest Service. The chief, Tom Kidwell, has made Arnold Schwarzenegger the third honorary forest ranger. This was a ceremony at the Department of Agriculture this week. And you have to wonder, gee, I'm surprised they did not give this award to Al Gore, because the agency, this is the Forest Service, is very pleased with Arnold's California Global Warming Solutions Act all the way back in 2006 that lowered the low-carbon fuel standard. Gee, I don't understand all of that, but apparently that's good for the forest, and what's good for the forest is apparently good for the U.S. Forest Service. So if you're wondering who the other two honorary forest rangers are, well, just go figure on this, Michael. It was Betty White, the actress, and the Rolling Stones keyboard player, Chuck Lavelle. So that's the adventures for Arnold this week. And if you're wondering what happens to an ex-California governor, he becomes forest ranger.
Where can we read more of your work?
You can find me on Twitter at Harper Bulletin, and always with the Inside the Beltway column and Water Cooler blog at WashingtonTimes.com. Thank you.
Jennifer Harper, thanks again for being with us on The Savage Nation.
It's always my pleasure, Michael.
I'll be right back.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
From John Wayne to Lady Gaga in two generations. From I Spy to I Cry in two generations. From I Love Lucy to I Love Loosely in two generations. From Al Einstein to Al Gore in two generations. From I Have a Dream to I Have a Scheme in two generations. From Catcher in the Rye to Ketchup on the Fly in two generations. From starlets to harlots, preachers to breachers, athletes to sexleets, rabbis to sandflies, Boy Scouts to Toy Scouts, Girl Scouts to Twirl Scouts, from the Eagle to the Beagle, from LSD to ADD, from Cardigans to Partykins, from Cub Scouts to Scouting Cubs, from Aspirin to OxyContin, from Lady Jane to Let's Get Insane, from Law to Claw, from Hanging to Ganging, from Zip Guns to Machine Guns, from Red Book to Spread Books. From Acorn the Tree to Acorn the Spree. From Babies to Puppies. From Guppies to Yuppies. From Gift Wrapping to Meat Packing. From Private Vets to Private Jets. From Soldiers Who Kill to Soldiers Without Will. From Lassie to Sassy. From Religion to Pigeons. From Eons to Peons. From Rapists to Offenders, from Stickball to Speedballs, from the Air Force to a Bear Force, from the Navy to Loose Gravy, from the Army to I'm Swami, from Israel to Fizrael, from Taiwan to Spearswan, from the Dragon to the Eagle, from the Dragon and the Beagle, from Dragsters to Drag Queens, from Redwoods to Deadwoods, from Health Foods to Wealth Foods, from heroes to zeros, from UFOs to IOUs, from hirsute to lawsuit, from Melorols to melanine, from Niagara to Viagra, from Coney Island to Survival Island, from the Five Families to the Sly Families, from Al Capone to Sly Stallone, from Ike to Spikes, Truman to the Untruman, Reagan to Swayman, Rayburn to Pelosi, from the Eagle to the Beagle, from the Bible to the Legal. That's the story of America. America the Great to America that Greats. From Dr. King to Larry King. From LeMay to Dismay. Using hate crimes to create great crimes. Yeah, well, I can keep going with it. I'm collecting these. This is my old jazz poem. Originally on my notes, my yellow striped 8.5 by 11 paper, handwritten, 5:40 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, April 6th, no year, over Wichita Falls, Challenger 343,000 feet. I somehow write some of the most interesting poems in airplanes, which is why I don't fly, because I don't really want to write any more interesting poems. I just want to talk. Your soft totalitarian president has signed an executive order tonight, taking over the nation's climate change policies. Another step towards tyranny. I did amnesty 3 days this week. I did it Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Today being Friday, I'm trying to, you know, lighten it up a little bit. The audience is a little different. I think we should go back into my archives and find the key moments in the Savage Radio talk show that changed the world and play them in the first week of my new show in January when I hit a whole new audience. You think that's a good idea? And, you know, I'm going to invite my audience to get into this with me, to become my producers. If you have good ideas of what I should do the first week in January when I go on the air in my new drive time slot, what should I do to introduce myself other than my regular show? I mean, I'm telling people, hey, don't expect me to change very much. It's going to be me, my moods, and the news. And I'll go up and down with it as I you know, normally do. I can't change myself. But I need to introduce myself to the millions and millions of new listeners who will never have heard of me. I mean, just by sheer time and the real estate that I'm inheriting on the Cumulus stations, I will have millions of new listeners. And I think many of them need to know who I am so they don't confuse me with someone else. So I'd invite my listeners. Now, how do I get them to send it to me? God, that's the problem. I don't have any email. That's the issue. See, there's the problem there. Maybe we'll do a show on it next week from here and again. Like, Mike, you should do this. Mike, you should do that. Mike, you should do this. Mike, don't do that. Mike, do this. Eat your heart out. Get 855-400-7282 is the phone number. Let's listen to the callers now. Paul on WABC, welcome to the program.
Mike, I have one more. From those that ravage to the brilliance of Mike Savage.
Of course, I love it. See, that nasty station that is deficient of Michael Savage now.
Oh, that goes back at least 15 years, I think, Mike.
Who knows?
I, you know, been trying to figure out your show for a while. You remind me of a one-man Broadway show. Your show is entirely satire. It's a...
It can be, yes. When I'm in the right frame of mind, it goes back. I did homage to Mort Saul once. I had him on the show. Elderly gentleman, but he used to do this with the newspaper in the 50s. I was a wee lad. He'd come out on the stage with a newspaper and a cardigan, and he'd start riffing on the news. He did it. He was the first to do it. He's still around. He's 90-some-odd years old.
Well, you're doing it, and you don't even know you're doing it when you're doing it. When you're talking serious, when you're angry, when you're doing politics, when you're doing the news, whatever you're doing, it's satire. It's a natural, you know, just it flows out of you, satire. That is your primordial, I think, emotion on the world.
I take it you may be a psychologist by training.
Well, I'm a retired psychiatric nurse.
Thanks for the compliment. Do you have a straitjacket handy? No, I get it. Well, you know, in a way to say it's part of my nature, it is. Well, to have a satirical nature is a blessing and a curse. You know that, don't you? It keeps many men sane and also can yield the opposite.
Savage.